My name is Brendan Lotz, and thank you for tuning in to this edition of the HTXT.Africast. This week we discuss the goings-on at the SABC, as well as what has been happening at E3 in Los Angeles this week. Sadly, towards the end of the podcast, our recording software failed, and the last 5 minutes of the AfriCast are missing. So rather than record an entire new podcast repeating the same information that we've already done, we thought we'd just release it as is and apologize for the missing 5 minutes. So we hope that you enjoy it. You haven't missed much. We had basically wrapped up at the point that the recording failed, and we were just in the process of saying goodbye. So we're not being rude. We just had a technical issue. We'll be back again next week. We're going to be testing out a different recording software to try and avoid these sorts of problems from happening again. And we're really sorry that you missed out on the last 5 minutes and us saying goodbye, but we'll be back again next week, stronger than before. Hello, it's Wednesday, and that means it's time for another edition of the HTXT AfriCast, and this week we are in studio. Joining me is Nick Cowan.
Hello.
And Lungelo Shezi.
Hello, hello.
How are you guys doing today?
Tired. I'm very tired. I was up at 2 a.m. this morning.
I have all the energy in the world. Well, all of it.
I'm like a mixture of you two, because I got to bed at around 11, 12. Or 11, 12, I started to decide to go to bed.
And then when did you have to wake up again?
6:30.
Shame. How will you be sleeping like right this minute?
Well, I can't because I need to talk about a podcast. Mm. Talk on a podcast. See, I can't even talk properly
Shame
at this point.
Priorities.
Why are you so tired, Nick?
No, because I had to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning to watch Sony's E3 keynote in Los Angeles. Which I think was, I can't remember what time, Pacific time it was. I just know it was 3 a.m. our time. And then I had to write the whole thing up for 5 o'clock.
The joys of game journalism.
In the cold. It was very cold.
It has been very, very cold over the past couple of days.
Not really.
Maybe for you, but I have reptilian blood.
That's because you live like...
You live on a farm.
Yeah, okay, fine, guys.
It's cold even in... December or something like that, you know?
No, so, it's not.
Well,
doesn't the place burn down in December?
No, it burns down during winter when there's a lot of stuff happening, like dry, fires.
Like dry foliage, very hot sun.
Yeah, that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Anyway.
Right, so let's get into this. Lungelo, you're going to tell us what's been going on at the SABC.
Yes.
That's all I'm here for. That's just.
That's not true.
It's
not
fine. True. No, it's fine. That's all I'm used for.
You were also
for in
pointing
this
out that the Western Cape rains didn't actually help the drought down there at all.
Ach, shame, man. But anyway, so.
The poor Western Cape, though. Can we just take 2 seconds to just say the Western Cape is in our thoughts?
Maybe.
Wow.
No, they are. Shame.
They had a huge storm last week that the NYSDA fires. Like, they're having
a bad
time. And
it's such a contrast, hey? Like, water this side and fire.
Fire that
side,
yeah.
But anyway, water's a doable. Okay, let me not say that water is better than fire.
Yeah.
But it seems that the storms had less damage than the fires. Yeah. Because, sure. People's houses and everything's burned down in NYSDA. But so the storms on Wednesday and Thursday last week, from what we all saw in visuals on TV and whatnot in social media, it was pretty bad in terms of wind and rain and the sea. But it did almost nothing for the dam levels, which are critical, right? And when we say critical, we're not, talking in
not embellishing.
Political. No. We mean literally critical. So before the rains, the dams were at about between 17% and 20%. And today, as of yesterday, according to the Western Cape government, only 1.6% of the rains added rose the official provincial levels by 1.6%, and it's now at 21.6%. 21.2%.
Okay.
So effectively, because the last 10% of water is not consumable, so we can't drink it. We can't, you know, it's just water that's just like at the
bottom. It's like groundwater.
Yeah,
like
it's at the bottom of the dams and it's not suitable for human consumption. Yeah. That means effectively the water levels are now at 11.2%. So it's the situation is still bad. Let's not even, because, and if, and the even sadder thing that last in between November and February, March, this year when Gauteng had all those rains. I mean, it wasn't even a consecutive thing where it happened like day after day. It was like one day, it was massive floods.
Yeah.
Of course, sadly, people lost their lives and some of them lost, you know, their homes. Cars and whatever. But that was such a massive, massive help. I mean, we're...
I mean, let's not forget that the Vaal was also filled by dams around Gauteng.
So apart from the Vaal itself, Gauteng, other dams in Gauteng were also... so if you take away the whole them I'm not sure what the word is, but they took water from another dam.
Refilling?
And refilled, helped fill.
Reassigning the water.
Yes, but it wasn't much. It was like less than 10%.
Yeah, I believe.
So even with that, the rains here really did a lot and pushed us way over the 90% mark. So I guess people had thought that, okay, the same might happen with Western Cape. Maybe we'll see maybe a 5% rise. Unfortunately, it did not happen. So people in the Western Cape still need to save a whole lot of dam water. You really don't need to be climbing into a jacuzzi right now. It's fine.
Or a bath. Drink, for that matter.
Yes, just drink, shower for like 2 seconds, eat, and you'll be fine. And, well, wash, of course, but really, watering gardens, washing cars with a hose pipe.
Extraneous things should be left. I mean, like, just for example, I mean, the farm that I stay on, our water pump has now been stolen for... I don't even know how many times in the last 3 months.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we only have so much water to play with until the pump gets fixed. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah.
And you realize very quickly
how important water is
to your life. So if you're listening to this in the Western Cape, be very sparing of the amount of water that you have.
Yeah.
It's getting a bit out of hand. Bad.
Yeah. And while I do admire your attempt to avoid the cloudy... We're going back to the cloudy.
It has to come to this episode.
So the SABC reported a massive loss today, didn't they?
Good and bad news for the SABC. Good in that, I mean, sorry, let's start with the bad news. The bad news is that for the 2016-17 financial year, which ended on the 31st of March this year, the SABC posted a 1.1 billion rand revenue loss. And this 1.1 amount is 590 million rand higher than the same amount of loss that was posted at the same time last year. Additionally, so while they were announcing their fourth quarter results, because, you know, quarterly results are announced.
Oh, is this the interim board announcing this?
Yes, it was the interim board. And so its fourth quarter loss was 509 million. So all of this eventually adds up to 1.1 billion rand. So effectively, the SABC is in a very, very serious financial crisis, and they will have to eventually get a bailout from the National Treasury. But I tell you what.
What?
I don't mind, for once, I don't mind them getting a financial bailout. Why? Because the main culprits behind such massive losses are more or less gone.
Yeah.
The old SABC board, which was terrible, absolutely, absolutely terrible, they're all gone. Thank you very much. By the end of last year, all of them were gone. And so the new interim board had to come in, and they've been doing a great job so far. The Minister of Communications was also a big enabler in terms of the mess that was going on in the SABC. She's gone.
Yeah.
Well, she's been moved over to another portfolio, though.
She has nothing to do with...
But she's got nothing to do with communications anymore, which is perfect.
She cannot say a thing about...
I don't know. I'd be interested to see what else she's busy with at the moment. But anyway, moving right along.
And the acting CEO, James Akuma, who was moved from CFO, has been suspended, and he's having a disciplinary hearing very soon. And lastly, the biggest mountain, the biggest iceberg, the biggest, you know, whatever you
the
want
man
to
who inspired over 200 articles written by your good self in the year 2016.
Exactly.
His name moves mountains.
Cloudy instant headline, mudslinging.
Yes, he's gone. And
he's been fired, isn't he?
Fired. So, surprise, I won't lie. I was not expecting him to go. Because so the reason why he's been fired is because at a disciplinary hearing that was called for, so you remember that whole 4 hour long press conference.
Well, this is the thing, press conference in inverted commas, please.
This is why this actually might stick, because he has violated the terms of his employment.
Yes,
contract.
So that's
which is weird when you consider the fact that he was told by the Constitutional Court he's not allowed to be employed there anymore.
Well,
but they're going to get rid of him on the basis that he violated.
There were a lot of. So you're right in terms of him, you know, violating terms of his contract. But there were also a few places where the loopholes that he could have escaped through. So him holding that press conference was obviously his own brilliant idea. But according to him, he got the CEO's permission to do so.
Oh, and the CEO.
So that could have worked for in his favor.
Would that be Aguma, who was then suspended?
Yes. But he was still CEO. Everything was still fine for him then. So he could have just said, "Hey, listen, the big boss gave me the go ahead, and I did it." But now, so he probably got off scot free on that, because we don't have.
Yeah,
the
but
full...
then he didn't need proceed to slag off
exactly.
The interim board.
That's where they caught him.
And that basically is that you're bringing the reputation of the SABC as an entity into disrepute.
That exactly.
So
that's where they nailed him. So it could have gone either way, but it's just that the.
Are you a offenses... gambling lady?
Sometimes.
what odds will you give that Cloudy's going to appeal this?
Oh, goodness gracious me.
I think he's appealing.
Yeah, no.
Because the DA basically said to him yesterday, we wouldn't bother if we were you.
Yeah, but does he care? No. So, and he's got an awful lawyer, advocate, whatever he is. So the thing is, he hasn't yet officially said anything, because according to him, when he was interviewed by one or two news sites, he had not been told of his dismissal, which is a lie, because the SABC board expressly said that he has been informed. And obviously, as an employee, you know, the Labour Act, it would be stupid for any board to fire someone on TV and then, you know, possibly rack up a CCMA or whatever.
Well, I mean, the thing is that, like... and I hesitate to use this, but the shall we say the forces for good. This is something that was raised at the hearings at the end of last year.
Yeah,
was when they had finished talking to the SABC board, and they were literally talking amongst themselves, saying, "Look, we've got to do this absolutely by the book, because we know that the moment we take action, it's going to be appealed against."
Yes,
and I think the same thing's going to apply here, which is like. You have disobeying his marching orders in any official capacity. You had better have a watertight case and all your ducks in a row.
So you need
because
to
otherwise,
trade very
he
carefully.
Is going to appeal it.
Yeah.
And if there's any doubt, then the whole process starts again.
Yeah. And who wants to, I mean, it's our taxpayers' money at the end of the day, because
what will you write about now that he's gone?
I don't know. We'll just have to find an...
I'm sure that somebody will do something terrible.
I actually will be happy to stop writing about the SABC, because then that would mean that they're getting their ducks in a row. I mean, if they fired all these people and they're trying to get a bailout from government, which I would say... if the bailout was being applied for while everyone was still there, then screw it. No,
you'd
because
have a
they're
problem,
gonna,
yeah.
you know, they're gonna. That's what's been happening with other state-owned entities, that they keep on applying for bailouts, but the culprits of every, you know, financial culprit. I mean, crisis
basically
is still there.
Yeah, the bailouts happen, but the management structure doesn't.
It's still there. So because the SABC is, you know, cleaning up house.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not opposed to a bailout for them. It's a lot of money that we needed, but hey.
Do you think we have seen the last of Cloudy Motsoeneng? And the reason I ask this is because over the last year, that guy has, for me, started to become like one of those monsters in the 80s films, like Jason Voorhees
or
Freddy Krueger, just when you think you've got them down.
I think you will behave, because Cloudy is a complete... I mean... The thing is...
..
The difference with Cloud and every other certain deployee, you know, term deployee, at state-owned entities, that every other of one is, either highly educated or they're highly experienced. So it's not like they're a bunch of idiots who don't know what the hell they're doing. They're just a bunch of greedy idiots who know exactly what they're doing. So, for instance, Brian Malefa. Brian Malefa, Gupta's aside, whatever he's done in the past aside, he's qualified, he's intelligent, and he's got the experience. But
with Hlaoui, he retired and then he was on
So all of the... if he had really just chosen the straight and narrow path, we'd be congratulating him today. But yeah. Thank you very much. The curry's too strong. So...
Wow.
What did I say anything?
No, that was just amazing. That was just well timed.
The curry is just too strong to ignore. So with Hlaoui is not educated. He's not smart. He has no experience. So he's not someone that, you know, would easily be taken on by any state-owned entity. He's going back to Free State. Sorry.
Well, let's see what comes of him. I'm pretty sure he's going to start like a record company.
Good for him. And, I won't buy his CD.
It's going to be called 90% Music Production.
Exactly.
And he does 10% of the work.
Wonderful.
And everybody no one gets paid.
Exactly. I think that's or Hlaoui and the Baritones. Like a musical ensemble.
Just for now.
With him fronting on vocals. I think that would be amazing. All right, so that's enough of the SABC. Nick, you and I have been watching games all week.
We have.
Well,
we have.
You started on Sunday.
I started on Sunday.
With EA Arts, yeah. And Microsoft and Bethesda as well, wasn't it?
Yep.
So what can you tell us about those presentations?
Let me start right from the beginning in terms of like how many we've had here. Because one of the big things about E3 is obviously who won E3.
Yes.
And I think there is a very clear winner. And you were the one who got to watch it yesterday, which is Ubisoft. And we'll get to that in a minute. But in terms of EA and Microsoft and Bethesda, there weren't all that very many surprises with EA. Stop there.
Okay, I think we're in the... Are you supposed to be in here?
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right.
No, just checking. Yeah. So, okay. A few surprises.
Yeah, with EA, there were basically very few surprises. You knew what you were going to get. I mean, like, Lungella, you probably don't play electronic card games, but if I told you that there was a FIFA, would that surprise you at all?
A FIFA?
FIFA.
FIFA game.
FIFA game.
No.
Exactly. Doesn't even play games.
And she knows. And she knows. Every year there's a FIFA game.
Every year there's a FIFA. There was a Need for Speed that we already knew about because it had been announced already. There's one of the drivers now. off he goes. There was some DLC for Battlefield 1, which looks really, really good. But then again, Battlefield 1, I think, is one of the best games of last year. So
yeah,
the fact
I do agree with you.
DLC is great. There was going to be Madden. We knew that. Yeah. NBA Live. We knew that as well.
Which I just want to break off there. Like, the Madden actually looks really good because of the story mode campaign.
The long shot.
That's it. That actually looks really, really cool.
Well, this seems to be a new trend. Well, not I say new trend. It's a trend that's worming its way into more and more sports games. I think it started with NBA 2K. I think it was 16, where you had a story mode in NBA in NBA 2K, which was actually directed by Spike Lee, about a young and upcoming player making his way through the NBA,
grinding his teeth. Yeah,
and then last year. EA Sports put something called The Journey in FIFA, where you played a kid called Alex going from, you know, going into the Premiership. Mm. By the way, that story mode is continuing in this year's FIFA. And now you've got a story mode in Madden. Here's the thing. You can have all the story modes you like, unless you like the core game that surrounds it.
Fair enough.
No one cares. I mean, here's the thing. Are you a big American football fan?
I used to play a lot of Madden games when I was younger.
Well, then you'll probably enjoy it.
I would like to give this a bit of a shot. So.
It's like if I said to you, do you know that there's a story mode in the new NHL game? Are you a hockey fan?
Not really.
Big deal. The main two things, well, not the main two things, but the two surprises that came out of there was that BioWare basically announced what the name of their IP was. It's called Anthem, which to me just looks like Destiny.
Yes.
You know, persistent world, shooters, monsters, big walls, humans hiding behind the big walls.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, even though it's an EA-published game by BioWare, they just teased it and they gave the main reveal of that game to Microsoft for their for its.
Oh yeah, because Microsoft did the playthrough.
Well, they stuck it on the Xbox One X, but we'll get to that in a minute.
In a bit.
Anyway, and then of course there's a game called A Way Out, which is a prison break game from the developers of Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons, and that looks pretty interesting. But that was basically it for EA. We can shoot through Bethesda very quickly. Doom VR, Fallout 4 VR. There's going to be some DLC for Dishonored 2. There's a new Wolfenstein game, which apparently... Oh, you're going to love this. Okay, so do you know... Lungello, how well do you know the Wolfenstein franchise? Not at all.
Yeah.
Okay, so basically... Okay, this is going to blow... This might blow your mind, or actually you might just roll your eyes and say, I'm not surprised. But Wolfenstein essentially involves a bloke who's... he's a Jewish Polish guy, isn't
he? Yeah, I think he's a
his
name Jewish
is BJ,
Pole.
And basically he finds himself in a future where the Nazis won the Second World War, and they've got like loads of technological advanced weapons, and he essentially just kills them all. That's the story. Is this bloke killing Nazis? That's the story. And apparently, the new Wolfenstein game has upset Nazis. And they're going
wow.
on forums. And
because we need to take their feelings into consideration.
And they're going on forums and they're complaining about
wait,
this.
German Nazis or Nazis?
No. Like neo-Nazis in America? Like, not even like...
Listen, America has a problem.
Like old SS guys, not even there.
I don't even understand why America... Well, the American Constitution, which I'm not going to argue much on, why are they allowed to even exist?
Well,
like,
this is the thing, is that like... It's not even just the neo-Nazis, because like you could look at someone like someone who reads the Daily Stormer and go, well, you're obviously lost, my good man. But in the game, BJ comes back to the United States, which is occupied by the Nazis, and he joins a resistance movement. And one of the people in that resistance movement is a black an African-American lady.
You can say black, it's fine.
Black lady. And people have gone online saying... Oh, it's completely anti-white. Look.
Because she says, hey, white boy. Yeah.
Because you're so pro-diversity, aren't you?
Someone actually put a picture of Wolfenstein's logo on Twitter today, and they said, Wolfenstein, the myth of the tolerant left. And it's like, kidding.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so, yeah. So if you want to... annoy Nazis, talk about Wolfenstein online.
It looks actually rather good.
It does look very good.
And also what looks rather good is The Evil Within 2, which...
That was a really weird trailer. Yeah. Like, it messed with my brain a little bit, I won't lie.
Have you played the first one?
No,
you should play the first one, that'll mess with your brain as well.
Okay.
In fact, that's a really... I think it's a really, really good horror game because it's an homage. There's so many things you can see in that. It's got Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Blair Witch, Carrie, elements of The Living Dead. You know, I mean, your character, you know, if you coloured his hair... blonde, he'd look like John Constantine. So it's I'm interested to see what they do with the next one. So that was Bethesda, and that was
it.
EA. And then you had Microsoft.
Yeah.
And Microsoft basically spent most of their time either giving more details and confirming stuff that we already knew was in the pipeline.
Yeah.
Like Crackdown 3 got a release date. Cuphead finally got a release date. Sea of Thieves is got a vague release date, and Project Scorpio is now called the Xbox One X, and it's got a price and a release date. And apparently, you had a massive fight with your flatmate about this yesterday.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the thing: most powerful console ever made, $499. That will be retailing out here at $7,499. $499. Sorry, rands. So, I think that was good value for money.
I think that it's like, okay, so the reason that I think it's good value for money is that according to what we know from Microsoft, right, this is a fully fledged 4K capable console with HDR10, support for Rec 22, 2020 color gamut. It's just a really, really good looking console. And if you are in South Africa, I believe that it might be the most valuable way to hit 4K gaming. Because to build a PC that is capable of what the Xbox One X, I'm just going to call it Project Scorpio, to build a PC that is capable of doing what Project Scorpio is capable of doing, it's just going to cost you way too much money.
Yeah.
Especially when you start factoring into like, oh, but you don't need a mouse and a keyboard with an Xbox, you know? Like, there's things that you need. You need a motherboard, you need RAM, you need... And to build a system that's comparable to Project Scorpio, I think it's going to cost... I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's going to be really, really difficult.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, to
it's
get
gonna be
4K...
even more difficult keeping it on a budget.
Exactly. And this is all contained in one really swish-looking console. Their smallest console to date, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. And you get 4K gaming. Like, I understand if you don't have a 4K TV, this is not going to appeal to you.
Yeah.
But this console can hit 4K at 60 frames a second. Anybody that's worth their salt in PC gaming will realize that that is not an easy feat to achieve.
No.
And I think that this is a really good value for money little console. Yeah. Obviously, this is all based on what Microsoft has told us. We need to have a look at it. I want to read some more breakdowns, people taking it apart and looking at it.
We want a console to play with in order to actually test it out.
Obviously. So, like, don't go out and pre-order it now just because Microsoft's hype machine is really good.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm buying one of these.
I feel like I want to buy one of them just to see what it's like. I don't have a 4K TV.
I am probably going to buy one of these just because...
Forza 7 looks so amazing.
Well, it's not just that. It's the fact that, like... This does look like a dream machine to me,
and it's
something that would make me invest in a 4K TV.
Absolutely. So, like, I understand.
But why not get a PS4 Pro then?
Because it's not actually 4K. It upscales it and does weird things to it. So,
yeah. Really? How
yeah.
do you know that?
I've read things online.
I've read things.
Look, okay, I haven't used any of these consoles. I've read a lot about them. I'm primarily a PC gamer because that's what I can afford.
Right.
I can't buy a console because I can't afford one.
Mm. You'd have to get a TV.
Yeah, I'd have to get a TV.
And a TV
or I could
license.
Use a screen. Or I could get a 4K monitor. I don't need a TV license yet to get a monitor. Yet.
Huh. Have you not been
watching?
Have you not been listening?
I have been listening. That's why I added
they
yet,
need
guys.
Your money.
So I added yet. So I think that the One X, when it launches, I'd like to see more leading up to it.
Yeah.
Like to see some teardowns, all that sort of stuff. But as it stands right now, if it were to come out tomorrow and I had the asking price, I'd probably buy one.
You'd buy one. Okay.
Probably.
It certainly is cause for debate. It's certainly cause for interest. And like I said, it's like... At least you've got some games confirmed for the damn thing now, like Crackdown. Because that's the funny thing, is that, like, that's where Microsoft has fallen down in the past, is that, like, the exclusives that they've been offering are, like, few and far in between. It's like, here's a Forza, here's a Forza Horizon, here's a Gears of War, here's a Halo, what's the other one? Quantum Break, here you are. And, like, I think, what is it? Sony's had, like, 4 or 5... exclusives this year alone.
Yeah, and it's like...
I mean, they had Neo, they had Nier Automata, they got Horizon Zero Dawn, the MotoGP is in... the Gran Turismo is in the open beta. And they had, what was it called? Yakuza Zero, which is one of the best games of this year. And that was the other thing, looking at Sony's E3 presentation, it was just trailer.
Yeah.
You know? Admittedly... One of my issues with it was that a lot of the trailers, you didn't know how much was pre-scripted and you didn't
how
know
much was in-game footage.
What was in-game footage. I mean, for example, Detroit, bloody blah, what's it called? Detroit,
Become Human.
Become Human. That just looked like a svelte movie. I don't know what the game's going to look like other than that.
Yeah, everything thing, I've seen is cinematic.
Same thing with like the Uncharted game, same thing with the God of War game. The VR that they offered, some of it looked good, like Skyrim VR, and what was the other one?
Inpatient.
But there was a lot of stuff in there that just looked like rubbish. Like Moss didn't look very interesting. The Final Fantasy game where you go fishing looked ridiculous. Yeah, you go fishing. There's a Final Fantasy 15 themed fishing game. Because
awesome.
Are you not excited?
Was that not like a mini game?
No, I don't know. I hope so.
I think it was a mini game.
And then they had Destiny 2, which wasn't first by the. And they got Spider-Man, which looked pretty awesome. Although it was looked at as the closer QTE.
Yeah.
Death Stranding, funnily enough, didn't make an appearance at all.
Really?
Yep. Days Gone kind of looks like a budget The Last of Us. And the Uncharted game looks solid. But yeah, I mean, I would like to see more of these games. I'd like to have hands-on with these games.
Yeah.
But that was the thing, is that, like, Sony was going, look, this is on our console, this is on our console, this is on no other console. Yeah. And then, of course, the biggest reaction for the night was the two games, which was Monster Hunter World, which admittedly does look bloody good, and a remaster of Shadow of the Colossus for the PS4, which will be now the second time that game's been remastered.
I kind of understand why they're remastering it, because I think a lot of people haven't played it. And then didn't play the follow-up, The Last Guardian. So, yeah, makes a bit of sense.
But, yeah, I mean, the thing is that Xbox did show off some exclusives. I mean, like, they did show off State of Decay 2. That looked really, really good. The Minecraft in 4K looked really, really good.
Like Crackdown Minecraft.
Looked really, really good. You know, Cuphead, thank God it's got a release date now, because that's been doing. I remember doing that, previewing that at Rage in 2015.
Yeah,
you know. And I think they also showed off a new Metro game, which looked pretty good, but I don't think that's an exclusive.
So I think that what Microsoft needs to do is not necessarily make more exclusives, but do more with their exclusives. Mm. Like it kind of feels like they've gotten locked in this. Okay, cool. We're doing a Gears of War. We're doing a Forza. We're doing this. We'll try out something new here. Where you've got Sony, that's like, cool. We're gonna make robot dinosaurs, and you're gonna hunt them.
Yeah.
And then we're going to make Uncharted, and we're going to make it the best Uncharted we can do. So I don't think it's necessarily a question of doing more exclusives, but maybe just doing better exclusives.
Well, the other thing is also that Sony, unlike Microsoft, is prepared to take a bath, right? Because, I mean, David Cage's last game got kicked up and down the road. And I don't know how many people bought it, but it was like, Beyond Two Souls.
Yeah.
And it must have cost a bundle to make, because you had Hollywood stars in that thing. But they were prepared, fine. We will give David Cage some more money to make another game.
Yeah.
Guerrilla Games made Killzone for the longest time, and people said that the franchise fatigue had set in, even though I thought that the Killzone that was released for the PS4 was really good. But now they've been given more money, and now they make Horizon Zero Dawn, which is one of the best titles on the PS4.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about Sony, is they do push new IP. I think that Microsoft have fallen into the trap recently of consolidating their IP, and, you know, I wish they'd bring some back. Like, I wouldn't mind a Viva Pinata game.
No, absolutely. I loved that game when I was growing up.
Yeah.
It was so much fun. And I think, like, now, get a couple of mates over, have to crack open some beers, and play some Viva Pinata. Why not?
Yeah. So that's basically what I've been watching and drinking coffee. And you watched Ubisoft.
Yes. Which I was really actually impressed by. So one of the first things that I need to make mention of is that Ubisoft dispatched with all the usual bizarre antics that they do during their show. They got rid of all that, did it before the show, did all their memes, and acknowledged the Poopisoft logo. And then they just got into games. And the first game that they announced, they brought on Shigeru Miyamoto from Nintendo to announce Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle, which basically looks like XCOM, and your soldiers are swapped out for Mario and Rabbids. It looks really fun. It's for the Switch, developed by Ubisoft.
Nudisoft.
Well, Nintendo and Ubisoft.
Right.
Okay. And it looks really, really good. You get weapons, you get to level up. As you level up, you get to unlock new combos that you can pull off with your team. It looks really, really fun. And it's for the Switch, and it'll be out later this year. Then they also showed off Assassin's Creed Origins, kind of acknowledged that, yes, Assassin's Creed Origins is a real thing, even though Microsoft told us this the day before.
Yeah.
And then they just gave us a bit of a, not during the show, they showed us like a gameplay trailer.
Mm.
And then after the show, they had 30 minutes of the actual gameplay. Right.
Let's toss to the side the stuff that we know.
Like, okay.
Steep, we can dispense with. And Just Dance can just piss off. Yeah, I mean, although that annoying. Having been said, you know, I know that the light is on and burning brightly for the masses. And what was the other? And South Park, the Fractured Butthole has been...
It's got a release date.
Yeah, but it's been trailed for 2 years now, so we can move past that.
So let's talk about The Crew 2 then, which is very, very interesting. So the first Crew was very. So it was an open world. You could race around America in a car, very nice, whatever. The Crew 2, they're actually taking open to the next level, and you can, if it has an engine, you can drive it. So boats, cars, motorbikes, off-road buggies, and cars. And it looks really, really interesting. The trailer that they showed off kind of showed people going from street racing up to racing on a track, which looked really, really awesome. So yeah, if you are into racing, I think this might be a nice kind of open worldish adventure, like GTA without the running around and shooting people. Might be fun. We'll have to wait and see. But the one that got me really excited is Assassin's Creed Black Flag. Skull and Bones, which is a pirate-themed game where you are a pirate sailing the seven seas and destroying other pirates and other people that come along your...
So in other words, it's Assassin's Creed Black Flag's asset box given a rather nice polish and put into a new game.
Pretty much.
That's good, though, because, I mean, that was a really great collection of assets. I mean, if you consider the work that went into, you know, Assassin's Creed Black Flag, I liked it so much. I'm one of the few people who bought Rogue, even though Rogue was for the previous gen consoles. Yeah. I still bought that. And it was really good. It was a lot better than I thought it was going to be.
Did it also have the sailing?
It had the sailing and the ships and stuff.
So, yeah, even...
you played a Templar.
And there are things. Like, during the trailer, I heard the shanties that we're playing were the same shanties I heard in Black Flag.
Well, this is a great thing for you because you don't really like Assassin's Creed games. And they've basically taken your favorite aspect of the Assassin's Creed
and put it into its own game.
And stuck it in a brand new game.
So I'm really excited for that. Obviously, like, I'm not going to go, yes, pre-order, until we actually know more about it. Like, if it has a single-player campaign.
Yes, but if we get a review copy, you're going to fight people.
Probably not. I'll just get my own copy. Then... Ubisoft decided to go with Toys to Life with Starlink Battle for Atlas.
Right.
So basically, if you don't know what Toys to Life are, think Skylanders, I think is its name.
Skylanders, Lego, Dimensions.
Yeah.
What's the other one that got cancelled? Disney Infinity.
Yeah, so you get little toys and then you attach these to some sort of interface and then it appears in the game. So Starlink does that with spaceships. And during the trailer that they showed off, they showed people... swapping weapons out on the fly to take out enemies. So they were fighting an ice giant thing, and then they were like, oh, the ice cannons aren't working against the ice monster.
Yeah.
And then the guy swapped it out for a fire cannons and then won, as you do in these trailers. It looks really, really cool, except that you're going to have to go and buy... You can either buy physical toys or you can buy digital content, which I think will help you...
To tell you the truth, I was amazed to see that. I just thought we'd drawn a line under it now.
Yeah.
When something the size of Disney that sells toys
says no,
this is not worth it. I mean, I'm still waiting for Pokemon to come in and just destroy the whole industry on that one.
I mean, like, it looks like a really cool game, the concept. I mean, flying spaceships around, destroying some enemies, why not? Mm. They showed it for the Xbox, the PS4, and the Switch, but I didn't see any toys for keyboard and mouse, for obvious reasons. So
the PC Master Race can take a flyer.
Yeah, pretty much. Then we saw Far Cry 5. Which they just showed us some gameplay and had a really cool soundtrack. But then what everybody's been waiting, I don't even know how long they've been waiting for this for, Beyond Good and Evil 2.
Yeah.
Which the trailer for that kind of came out of left field for a lot of people because there was a lot of naughty swears and there was even some almost X-rated content. But I kind of like that because the folks that played the original Beyond Good and Evil and want a sequel... are now old and older than they were when they played the first Beyond Good and Evil.
Mm.
So this might be a kind of homage to them. I mean, Michael Ancel arrived on stage crying when he announced it, which really tugged on my heartstrings. But it looks really good. The voice acting in the trailer was superb. We don't know much about it other than the trailer that we saw at E3. And but I think Ubisoft kind of stole it. I mean, we still got Nintendo...
this afternoon at 6 o'clock, and Sahil Lala is going to be covering that for us.
Yeah. So, I mean, Ubisoft so far has had one of the cooler conferences.
Yeah.
Just based on the stuff that... like, it just kind of... I looked at it afterwards and went, wow. The crew going, deviating from just cars... making a whole game about, like, say what you want. Okay, it's an asset flip, right?
Mm.
People still need to buy that game for that game to be profitable.
Yeah.
For Ubisoft to actually turn a profit on it. And if nobody buys that game, that's bad for them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they are taking risks, as it were.
You forgot to mention the most interesting, well, not the most interesting, but one of the biggest surprises of Ubisoft, which is that virtual reality.
Oh, yeah, Spectre Vision. So. during, I think it was just after the...
It was just before Skull and Bones.
Yeah, it was just before Skull and Bones. Ubisoft did a trailer for The Fractured Butthole. And then there was a really weird short snippet that appeared straight after that that starred Elijah Wood. And he was talking like, oh, Ubisoft has developed this thing. And then they started talking about uploading trauma into people's brains and being able to experience trauma. And then the footage started to get really weird and you started to get this real sense of foreboding. And we were told that we would learn more at a later date. But it looks really interesting. And Elijah Wood on board. I'd like to see what's actually like that.
I can take or leave Frodo, but I am kind of interested in seeing what that game looks like.
Yeah.
In answer to your question earlier, though, do you... The Beyond Good and Evil 2 has been in development since 2008.
Jeez.
And the first game in that series came out in 2003. So
it's a long time.
It's a long time to wait for a long ass time to wait for a sequel. But it's not even a sequel, it's a prequel.
Yeah. It is a prequel.
I agree with you. I think that Ubisoft did a bang up job. And here's the thing, I know that a lot of gamers look at Ubisoft and go, yeah, just make the same game all the time. It's like, well, maybe not. Maybe this.
I mean, let's look. This year they didn't tout anything as like, oh, this is the biggest open world that we've ever created or anything like that. They went, here's a game that we've made that does XYZ, and we hope that you'll enjoy it. And I mean, so many of the developers that came out on stage to speak about their games look so passionate about it.
Sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.